10 minutes later, seated at the Falcon's game table, as Saki-Sak stood guard between her and the hatchway, she slid the data card into her data pad. The message was short and very much to the point. "Leia, this is General Belyablis. I've just received some vital information and urgently need to talk to you. Please stay on Pakrik Minor. I'll be arriving there in 3 days and will meet you at the North Baris spaceport. Please treat this communication with the utmost security." Leia frowned, the skin on the back of her neck tingling. What in the worlds could Belyablis have found that he would need to come all the way out here? From somewhere in the far distance came the warbling call of Nogri combat code.
"The ship is approaching," Barkim translated. "Saki-Sak can see it."
Leia could hear the ship now. Sounds pretty small. A second Nogri battle call drifted in on the breeze.
"Saki-Sak says there is no danger, and we may come,"
Barkim said from her side, his voice slightly puzzled.
"But he warns that all is not as expected."
Leia frowned. Not as expected? What does that mean? Isn't General Belyablis there? It was indeed a small vessel, a two-person craft, with the lines of a diplomatic shuttle, but of a design Leia had never seen before. "Has Saki-Sak gone inside?" she asked.
"Yes, to investigate," Barkimk answered. "He is waiting with the pilot and passenger."
"Pilot and passenger?" Leia nodded mechanically.
"Chancellor Organa Solo,"
Saki-Sak called down gravely from the open hatchway.
"Your visitor humbly requests the honor of your presence."
And as he spoke, a new figure stepped into view. A tall humanoid covered with soft golden down with subtle purple markings around his eyes and shoulders.
"Peace to you, High Counselor Leia Organa Solo," he said,
his voice smooth and rich, yet with an undertone of deep and ancient sadness to it.
"I am Elegus Akla, trustant for the Kamasi Remnant. Will you join me aboard my ship?"
"Yes, trustant Akla," she said. "I would be honored."
"Please forgive my intrusion upon your privacy," the Kamasi said, backing away as she started up the ramp. "I am told you and your bondmate came here for rest, and I would not normally have violated your aloneness. But I greatly wish to speak with you, and the one whom I brought with me said his errand was important to the point of terrible urgency."
"And that person is?" Leia asked as she stepped into the ship. And there in a chair in the back of the room, squirming nervously under Saki-Sak's watchful eye, "Kent!" Leia exclaimed. "What in the name of the Force are you doing here?" "I needed to talk to you right away," Kent said, his voice sounding even more nervous than he looked as he bounded out of the chair. "I wanted General Belyablis, but he's missing, and I can't get hold of him. And you're president of the New Republic and all, so..."
"I'm not actually president at the moment, Kent," Leia interrupted him gently. "I'm on a leave of absence. Punk Gaversum is in charge of the government."
Kent blinked in surprise. Although he held the post of crypt chief for General Belyablis, away from his beloved computers, the young man was about as naive and lost as it was humanly possible to be.
"You see, General Belyablis gave me a data card..."
"One moment,"
Saki-Sak's harsh voice cut him off.
"Was it you who sent Counselor Organa Solo a message using Belyablis' name?"
"Well, yeah," Kent admitted, eyeing the Nogri warily. "I wanted the general, but I couldn't get a message through to him. So when I found out you were here..."
"All right, relax," she said. "Now, what is this errand that was of such vital importance?" Kent handed her a datapad.
"It's really a message for Belyablis," he said. "But, look, just read it, okay?"
Leia took the datapad and keyed it on. And then the words popped onto the datapad display, and an icy chill ran through her.
"Where did you get this?"
she asked, her voice sounding unreal through the sudden pounding in her ears.
"General Belyablis brought the data card back from Morishim," Kent said, his voice trembling now, too. There was a Corellian corvette that came into the system. Only a Star Destroyer caught up with it and took it away. Well, this was a transmission from the corvette. It was all mangled up, but I was able to sort through the jamming and finally untangle it. He took a deep breath. You see why I had to get it to someone right away?
Leia nodded silently, staring down at the message. It read, This is Colonel Mijah Vermal, Special Envoy from Admiral Pelion, sent here to contact General Bel Iblis concerning the negotiation of a peace treaty between the Empire and New Republic. My ship is under attack by traitorous elements of the Empire. If the New Republic agrees to hold such discussions, Admiral Pelion will be at the abandoned gas mining center on Pezzatin in 1 month to meet with you.
Counselor, Sakisak murmured quietly from across the room. Is there trouble?
Leia looked up at the Nogri, almost startled to find him there, as thoughts swirled through her mind. A peace treaty. Not a temporary truce, but an actual, genuine peace. Something she'd been longing for since the days of Emperor Palpatine, and her own youthful decision to oppose him. And here it was, being offered to them by the supreme commander of the entire Imperial fleet.
Counselor,
Sakisak repeated, stepping to her side, his large black eyes gazing with concern up at her.
What disturbs you?
Wordlessly, she handed the datapad to him. Sakisak spat something vicious-sounding in the Nogri language.
You cannot believe this,
he growled, disgustedly thrusting the datapad back at Leia.
The Empire is the embodiment of lies and treachery. It will never be otherwise.
May I see the message? Elagos asked. For a long minute, the Kamasi studied the datapad in silence. Then, his blue-on-green eyes glittering with emotion, he lifted his gaze to her again.
I see no alternative, he said. Yes, it may be a trap, but if there is even a small chance that Admiral Pelion is sincere, that chance must be explored.
Sakisak regarded the other suspiciously.
Who then do you suggest be asked to walk into the Empire's hands?
Elago shook his head. There is no need to ask anyone. The choice is obvious. I will go.
Sakisak seemed taken aback.
You?
Of course, Elago said. Counselor Organa Solo, I have an obligation to return Ghent to Coruscant. If you will accept that obligation upon yourself, I can leave for Pezzatin immediately.
Leia sighed. No, I'll be the one going to Pezzatin. Sakisak made a noise in his throat.
I cannot allow you to do that, Counselor Organa Solo, he rumbled. To step into such danger.
I'm sorry, Sakisak, Leia said gently. But I'm the only one here who has the authority to negotiate on behalf of the New Republic. And if Pelion is on schedule, he's been at Pezzatin for 11 days already. I have to go. And I have to go now.
Then Bakimk and I will of course accompany you. Even to death, if that is what awaits us.
Thank you, Leia said. Thank you too, Ghent, for bringing this to me. You did the right thing impersonating a general notwithstanding. Trustant Akla, I thank you too for your assistance here.
Wait a minute,
Ghent said, looking back and forth between Leia and Elagos.
I mean, Elagos? Can't you...
Travel alongside her, the Kamasi said. Certainly. I would be more than willing to do so.
He regarded Ghent thoughtfully.
But I have the prior obligation of returning you to Coruscant.
Ghent's face twisted into something almost painful-looking.
Okay,
he said in resignation.
Yeah, okay, sure, I'll go with you too. Why not?
Leia blinked. It was not the decision she'd been expecting from him.
I appreciate the offer, Ghent, she said, but it's really not necessary.
No, don't try to talk me out of it, Ghent said. I got you into this. Might as well stick through to the end.
Everybody says I need to get out more anyway.
Leia glanced at Elagos.
caught the other's microscopic nod. Apparently, 3 days alone in a two-man ship with a Kamasi had done Ghent a world of good.
All right, she said. Thank you.
She glanced around the room. We'll have to take the Falcon. Fortunately, Han and Carib were able to repair it fully. This ship is too small for all of us.
Ah, yes. Your illustrious husband. I had expected to find him here with you, Elgo said.
He left just this morning to track down President Gavrisom. It appears we may well require some decisions only the President can make.
Indeed, Elgo said. Then let us go. There is little time to spare.
No!
Ashori Senator Zhigdaksono snarled, slamming a horny-tipped fist down on the table for emphasis.
It is completely out of the question. The Ashori will not accept anything less than full and complete justice for the Kamasi and the people of the New Republic.
Justice is what we all seek,
the Amalan Senator Porolomir Tamiya countered, his voice the glacial calm of his species. But...
You lie!
Duxono all but screamed, his ears flattened against his head.
The Diamala demand the impossible and refuse to settle for anything else.
Senators, please.
President Ponk Gavrisom cut in, his wings sweeping briefly between the other two as if trying to separate a pair of enraged shock ball players.
I'm not asking for a resolution of the Kama situation here and now. All I'm asking...
Seated in the small room behind the false wall, Booster Terek shook his head.
Idiots,
he muttered, as he pushed the mute button to cut the transmission of the negotiations taking place in the next room.
They're all idiots. Where is that blasted Bell Iblis, anyway? I've got work to do.
You've got nothing but overhaul and maintenance work on the errant venture scheduled for the next 3 weeks. His daughter Mirax Terek Horn admonished him firmly, and you're not needed for a single bit of it.
Booster sent a glare at her.
I thought daughters were supposed to be a source of pride and comfort to their fathers in their old age, he grumbled.
She smiled. When you get there, I'll see what I can do, she promised. The smile faded as she turned back to the false wall. This whole thing is starting to get out of hand. Have you heard that 100 systems have already petitioned to rejoin the Empire? Behind them, the door slid open.
Ah, Captain Terek,
General Bell Iblis said, striding in and offering his hand.
Thank you for coming. I trust you've been well entertained?
If you mean the dance show, I've seen better,
Booster said, jerking a thumb toward the drama in the next room. Bell Iblis sat facing the two of them.
I'll get right to the point. You are, of course, aware that the build-up of warships over Bothawi is being repeated all over the New Republic, as worlds and species line up behind the Ishori and the Amala over this issue. The only way we're going to defuse the situation is to find a complete copy of the Kamas document, listing which Bothans sabotaged the Kamas planetary shields.
You said something about getting right to the point, General,
Booster said irritably.
Bell Iblis locked eyes with him.
Indeed. I want to borrow the errant venture.
Booster stared at him, too stunned even to laugh in the general's face.
You must be joking,
he got out at last.
Certainly not.
What do you need it for, General? Mirax asked. Bell Iblis shifted his gaze to her.
We think there may be a complete copy of the Kamas document in the Ubiquitrate base at Yaga Minor, he told her. Gavrisom has decided to launch an information raid to try to get hold of it.
A data raid on an Ubiquitrate base?
Booster echoed.
What poor sucker pulled that assignment?
Bell Iblis regarded him coolly.
I did, he said.
Sorry, General. I sympathize with your problem and all, but no deal. I went through too much for that ship to risk it in some crazy scheme that's none of my business anyway.
Bell Iblis cocked his head slightly to the side.
You sure about it being none of your business?
Booster tapped at his chest.
You see a New Republic military insignia here?
You see the Diamalan senator back there? Bell Iblis countered. They're allies with the Mon Cals on this Bothan situation, and you know how much the Mon Cals hate smugglers.
If all-out war breaks out, one of the first things they're likely to do is move against all smuggling groups they can find. He lifted an eyebrow. And with an Imperial Star Destroyer in your possession, where do you think you'll end up on their list of things to do? Booster grimaced. He had to admit that Bell Iblis had a case. But to be asked to risk his beloved errant venture was just too much. Yes, it was falling apart, with half its systems questionable or totally dead, and with an operating cost that would make an Imperial Baron blanch. But it was his. All his. He paused. What in the worlds was he thinking of? He uncrossed his arms and resettled himself in his seat, eyeing Bell Iblis speculatively.
Unfortunately, even if I said yes, you'd never get away with it, he pointed out. You turn a halfway decent sensor array on the errant venture, and a blind wampa could tell we're not up to Imperial standards anymore. We'd need turbo laser and tractor emplacement upgrades, shield rebuilds, whole system replacements. You name it, we need it.
Bell Iblis' gaze had hardened noticeably during the recitation. I see, he said dryly. Booster shrugged.
It's up to you, General. I'll lend you the ship, but in exchange, you have to upgrade the systems, and win or lose, those upgrades stay put when it's all over. That's my offer. Take it or leave it.
I'll take it, Bell Iblis said, standing up. Where's the ship now?
Parked over in the Howdam Wrist system,
Booster told him, standing up as well and trying not to show his surprise. His admittedly spotty experience with New Republic officials was that they needed more cajoling and a lot more bargaining before they finally gave in.
Where do you want it delivered?
I'll tell you once we're aboard, Bell Iblis said. Booster frowned.
You're coming with us?
Along with 200 of my crewers, the general said. We'll assist you in flying the ship until we pick up a proper crew at the rendezvous point. Booster drew himself up to his full height.
Let's get one thing straight right now, General,
he said stiffly.
The Errant Venture is my ship. If I don't captain her, she doesn't go anywhere.
Certainly, Bell Iblis said calmly. I wouldn't have it any other way. I have a shuttle waiting. We'll leave at once. Pelion lowered his eyes to his plate and forked another bite of the braised buraki, mentally tuning out the discussion around him. It was the same endless argument with the same opinions and speculations that had been playing its way around the ship in the weeks since Lieutenant Mavron had returned with the story of Thrawn's supposed appearance in the Kruktar system. Everyone from Captain Ardiff on down had his own opinion on whether or not it was true, and the entire ship was about as tense as an overwhelmed throwbo. But the waiting, at least, was about to come to an end. He'd given General Bell Iblis a full month and a half to make his plans, and the Chimera itself had been here at Pezzotin for 2 weeks. Clearly, for whatever reason, Bell Iblis wasn't coming. And it was time to go home, to return to the Empire and to Bastion. And on several levels, to find out what exactly Moff Dizra was up to. He would give the order to prepare for departure as soon as he was finished with his meal. If Bell Iblis didn't arrive in the hour after that...
Admiral Pelion, this is the bridge.
Major Chell's voice came from the mess table speaker. Ardiff got to the switch first. Captain here, he said. The Admiral's with me. What is it?
Ships just entered the system, sir.
Chell said, his voice tight. Ardiff flashed Pelion a sharp look. A repeat performance by our pirates, Major?
I don't think so, sir. So far, at least, it's only a single ship, YT-1300 Light Freighter, minimally armed. They're transmitting a request to come aboard and speak with the Admiral.
Pelion took a deep breath. Is there a name attached to the transmission? He asked.
Yes, sir, Chell said. She claims to be New Republic High Counselor Leia Organa Solo.
There was a lone figure waiting at the foot of the Falcon's ramp as Leia and the other three started down. A white-haired man of medium height, his face lined with age, but with the parade ground straight back of a professional military officer.
Counselor Organa Solo,
he said, nodding gravely as she approached. I'm Admiral Pelion. Welcome aboard the Kimura.
Thank you, Admiral,
Leia said.
And this is Elegos Akla, Trustan for the Kamasi Remnant.
Pelion smiled faintly as he nodded.
Trustan Akla?
And on my right side is Sakisak Clan Tlaxa,
Leia continued, gesturing to the Nogri beside her. Pelion's smile remained, but Leia could sense a new brittleness behind it.
Of course, the Admiral said. Alderanian, Kamasi, and Nogri. Three beings with the most reason to hate the Empire.
We hold no anger toward you personally, Admiral,
Elegos said calmly.
Nor have we animosity toward the people of the Empire. Each of our worlds was destroyed by the hand of Emperor Palpatine, and he too is now dead. Continuing to nurture the fires of hatred would gain us nothing.
Thank you, Trustan, Pelion said. I appreciate your generosity and your wisdom.
Pelion then turned to Ghent, standing nervously at Elegos' other side.
And what particular grievance do you represent, sir?
Me? Ghent asked, staring. Oh, no, I'm not part of this group. I mean, I'm just the slicer who reconstructed Vermal's message for General Bel Iblis.
The last hint of a smile vanished from Pelion's face.
What do you mean, reconstructed? He demanded. Didn't the Colonel present his message in person?
I'm afraid he didn't get that far,
Leia said.
According to General Bel Iblis, his corvette was intercepted by a star destroyer while on approach to Morishim.
Pelion's eyes had gone deadly.
I take it Colonel Vermal was a close friend,
Elegos said quietly.
I will hope that he still is.
Pelion exhaled.
But you did indeed come to talk peace. If you'll follow me...
Leia demurred. I'd prefer to hold our discussion aboard my ship, if you don't mind. I'm afraid my bodyguards insist on that.
For a fraction of a second, there was a flicker of uncertainty, even fear, in Pelion's emotions.
There will be no danger to you, Admiral,
Elegos spoke up.
Not unless you yourself bring it aboard.
Pelion waved a hand at the ramp.
In that case, Counselor, I accept. Please, lead the way.
A minute later, Leia, Pelion, and Elegos were seated around the Falcon's game table. A distressingly informal place for such a momentous occasion, Leia thought with some embarrassment, but the only place on the ship where they could all sit together comfortably.
I'll get right to the point, Counselor,
Pelion said.
The war that began 20-odd years ago is effectively over, and the Empire has lost.
And is this opinion shared by others in the Empire? Leia asked. A muscle in Pelion's cheek twitched.
I'm sure the average Imperial citizen has recognized that truth for quite some time. It's merely been the leadership who have clung to the hope that the inevitable could somehow be prevented.
And does that leadership now agree with the two of us and the average Imperial citizen?
Yes,
Pelion said.
Reluctantly, but yes. I've been authorized by the 8 remaining Moffs to open peace negotiations with the New Republic.
Leia felt her throat tighten. She had heard Vermal's message, had come aboard, and seen Pelion waiting alone for her. But only now did it suddenly seem truly real. Peace with the Empire.
Yet, as you have already said, the Empire has lost, Elegos spoke into the silence. What then remains to be negotiated?
Perhaps what we would gain is not as obvious as you think,
Pelion said.
The New Republic is, after all, struggling with internal turmoil, with every indication that matters are getting worse.
He looked pointedly at Elegos.
Several of the Moffs, in fact, believe you're on the verge of collapsing into total civil war over this Kamasi issue. In the midst of such anarchy, the remnants of the Empire could easily be overlooked. Why then should we bother with the humiliation of a treaty at all?
Still, Leia said, if you really believed we were about to destroy ourselves, you wouldn't be here.
Perhaps,
Pelion said.
Perhaps I merely don't believe the more virulent haters of the Empire would forget about us. But let me first state what the Empire would want included in any treaty between us,
he continued.
We would want our current borders confirmed and accepted by Coruscant, with guarantees of free travel and trade between our worlds and those of the New Republic. No harassment, no border skirmishes, no propaganda pressure against us. Of course, all guarantees of safety would work the other direction as well. No attacks by Imperial forces, no provocation, no hired privateers.
His face twitched in an almost smile.
And, of course, if we should happen to stumble across another superweapon Palpatine had hidden away, we would work with you to dismantle it.
Leia braced herself. And what about the superweapon you're already using?
Pelion frowned. What superweapon?
The one that nearly defeated us once before, Leia said. Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Pelion's lips compressed briefly. I don't know, Counselor. I have no idea at all what's going on there.
What do you mean?
Exactly what I said, Pelion told her. I've been here at Peziton waiting for General Bel Iblis for the past 2 weeks, and was running under a communications blackout before that. I didn't even know Thrawn had been reported alive until a week ago.
Leia frowned, stretching out to Pelion with the Force, but there was no duplicity in his thoughts or emotions that she could detect. You say reported alive, Admiral, Elagos said. Does your choice of words imply you don't believe he has actually returned?
I don't know what to believe, Trustant, Pelion said. Certainly I had every reason to think he was dead. I was there on the Chimera's bridge, standing at his side when he appeared to die.
Leia hesitated, but there was no easy way to say this. It occurs to me, Admiral, that these talks may be somewhat premature, she said. If Thrawn is alive, then you are presumably no longer head of the Imperial military.
If he's alive, he will most certainly relieve me of supreme command, Pelion said evenly. However, at the moment, that consideration is irrelevant. The military is subordinate to the Moffs, and the Moffs have authorized me to negotiate this treaty.
I see, Leia murmured, gazing at the old admiral with a sudden new understanding. He had learned about Thrawn's return a full week ago, yet instead of rushing back to learn more, he had deliberately remained here under communications blackout. Not just to wait for Bel Iblis, but to make sure he still had the authority to negotiate if and when Bel Iblis arrived, to start the ball rolling, perhaps beyond the ability of the Moffs or even Thrawn to easily stop it. As Leia digested all this, she was figuring out when and how to consult with Gavrissom to keep her own ball rolling. But of one thing at least, she was sure. This was not a game. Or at least not a game Admiral Pelion was helping to run. Admiral Pelion, Supreme Commander of Imperial Forces, genuinely wanted peace. Captain Ardiff was waiting in the aft bridge when Pelion emerged from the turbolift. Ardiff lifted his eyebrows slightly. May I ask
how the talks went? Pelion shrugged. As well as preliminary talks ever go, I suppose. Organa Solo isn't about to commit the New Republic to a course of action based on my word alone, and I made it similarly clear that I can't accept her word as guaranteeing Coruscant's future actions. So, there's a great deal of careful verbal dancing yet to be done. And in the meantime, he added, we have other matters to attend to. Set course for Bastion, Captain. It's time Moff Dizra and I had a long, serious talk.
Moff Dizra was behind his desk in his Bastion Palace headquarters when Tierce walked in.
Another report from your new empire, Your Excellency,
Tierce said, laying a pair of data cards on Dizra's desk.
The Ruurian governments have forwarded a copy of the fully executed treaty between their systems and the Empire.
Dizra looked across the room to where Flim was hunched over in a chair, staring moodily out a window.
Congratulations, Admiral. You've picked up 3 more systems.
There was a beep from the display on Dizra's desk.
Your Excellency.
Muttering a curse, Dizra keyed the comm switch.
Yes, what is it?
A young, earnest-looking man appeared on the display.
Major Kerf here, Your Excellency. Spaceport Control. I thought you'd like to know that his shuttle has just landed.
Dizra shot a look over the display at Tyrus, got a shrug in response.
Whose shuttle has just landed?
I thought you knew, sir.
Kerf said, sounding bewildered.
He said he was on his way to the palace to see you, and I just assumed...
Never mind your assumptions, Major, Dizra snapped. Who is it?
Why, the Admiral, sir.
Kerf stammered.
You know, Admiral Pelion.
Bracing himself, Dizra lifted his eyes from the datapad.
I don't know what to say, Admiral,
he said, careful not to overdo the hurt indignation in his voice and expression.
I categorically deny all of these preposterous allegations of corruption. It is difficult even to dignify them with a response.
Of course, Pelion echoed, his eyes cool and measuring.
I'm sure it's nothing more than a carefully orchestrated smear campaign against you by your political enemies, added Commander Drafe, one of Pelion's staff officers.
Dizra bit down on his tongue in annoyance. That had indeed been the line he'd been planning to run with. Vader take the man anyway.
I wouldn't go quite that far, he said instead. I have no doubt that at least some of your sources have been sincere. Whatever their motivations or sincerity, though, their information is wrong.
It was an unbelievably weak defense, and everyone in the office undoubtedly knew it. Dizra felt the walls closing in on him. The call signal sounded from Dizra's desktop comm. Scowling, he leaned forward and jabbed the switch.
Yes, he barked. What is it? I'm rather busy and I don't appreciate...
Abruptly, he stopped. He saw an opportunity to go regroup, see what his master strategist Tyrus might have to offer, and he seized it. He turned to Pelion and spoke quickly, urgently.
Please, excuse me, there's a matter I must attend to right away.
He stood up.
I'll be right back.
Heading at a not-quite run toward the double doors.
Of course, Pelion called after him. Take whatever time you need.
The last word was cut off by the boom as the doors closed behind Dizra.
Well, that was interesting, Drafe commented. A trick to buy himself some breathing space?
Perhaps, Pelion said. In the meantime, it seems we've been left alone in Dizra's office.
Drafe lifted his eyebrows in understanding.
Yes, we have, haven't we?
He agreed, looking around the office. His gaze fell on the desk.
Of course, it's a little dubious legally, he reminded his superior. We haven't got a search order, and Dizra hasn't been officially charged with anything.
I'll take the responsibility, Pelion said. Go ahead and see what you can find.
Yes, sir, Drafe said,
giving him a tight smile as he circled around to the other side of the desk.
It'll be a pleasure.
It took Commander Drafe less than a minute to locate the secret drawer hidden beneath the desk's writing surface. It took only 2 minutes longer, with the help of some rather illegal tools, for him to force it open. Inside were 8 data cards. 3 of them carried the labels of official governmental briefings, one from the Ubiquitrate, the other 2 from Fleet Intelligence. But the other 5...
Make copies of them,
Pelion ordered as Drafe slid one of the unlabeled data cards into his datapad.
All of them, even the official ones. We'll see what the Chimera's decrypt section can do with them.
Let me try something first, if I may, sir,
Drafe said, pulling a data card from his pocket and inserting it into his datapad's auxiliary slot.
One of the little extras we picked up on Mu'una list was the encrypt Dizra was using to communicate back to Bastion. Let's see if he was overconfident enough to use the same one here. Well, well, our clever little moth seems to have missed a bet.
He smiled tightly at Pelion.
It's all here, Admiral. Bribes, kickbacks, names, amounts, you name it. Dizra was even kind enough to supply dates on everything. All I really need to do...
Wait,
Pelion cut him off.
Never mind copying them, he said, gathering up the data cards. We'll take the originals.
Drafe blinked.
Sir, but...
And we're leaving, Pelion added.
What about Dizra? Drafe asked. We haven't settled with him yet.
Dizra will keep,
Pelion said grimly.
Incoming ship, you are now entering Exocron airspace. Please identify yourselves.
This is Talon Card, aboard the freighter Wildcard. Our intentions are peaceful. We'd like permission to land.
Very well, Wildcard. You're cleared for Circle 15 at the Rintata City Military Landing Field.
A slender man with short hair and a dapper crush-hide jacket was there to meet them.
Good day, Captain Card. Entu Nidan ears at your service,
he said, giving a short bow.
Call me Entu Ni. Welcome to Exocron.
Thank you. Do I assume you are here to take us to Georges Cardas?
He awaits,
the little man said. Entu Ni led the way to an open-topped land speeder at the edge of the landing circle. Weaving his way expertly in and out of the traffic, he headed off toward the mountains, which marked the outer limits of the city. A few minutes later, he brought the land speeder to a smooth halt in front of a simple, unassuming house, whose paint had chipped and faded with age and neglect.
You lead the way,
Shada said to Entu Ni, sliding herself deftly between Card and the house.
I'll be behind you. Card will be behind me.
Oh, no, that won't do at all, Entu Ni said as he opened the front door, revealing a shabby, water-stained wall about 10 feet in front of them.
It's all right, a voice interrupted.
Georges Cardas strode forward. He half turned and waved at the back wall, and abruptly the wall was no longer there. In its place was a long tunnel, equipped with 4 guide rails that faded off into the distance. Just beyond where the wall had been, an enclosed quadrail car was waiting.
Let me take you across to my real home, Cardas continued. It's much more comfortable than this place.
He waved a hand toward the car, and a side door swung invitingly open in response.
Please, after you.
Card looked at the open door, an odd tightness squeezing his heart.
Why don't just you and I go?
He offered instead. Shada and 3PO can return to the wild card.
No.
Shada cut him off firmly, then turned to Cardas.
You want to show someone around, Cardas, you take me. Then if I decide it's safe, I'll consider letting Card join us.
Really?
Cardas said, regarding her with such obvious amusement that Card found himself cringing. Being amused at someone like Shada wasn't an especially healthy thing to do.
Such quick and short-tempered loyalty you inspire in your people, Card.
She's not one of my people, Card told him quickly. She was asked to come along by High Counselor Leia Organa Solo of the New Republic. She has absolutely nothing to do with me or with anything I might have done in the past.
Please, Cardas interrupted, holding up a hand. I admit this is highly entertaining to watch, but in all seriousness, you're both worrying about nothing.
He looked Card straight in the eye.
I'm not the man you once knew, Talon, he said quietly. Please, give me the chance to prove that.
Card let his eyes drift away from that unblinking gaze. If Cardas truly wanted them dead, it didn't really matter whether they played along or not.
All right, he said.
Come on, Shada, 3PO. A minute later, they were all in the quadrail car, speeding smoothly down the tunnel.
I mostly keep to myself these days, Cardas commented. But occasionally I still need to deal with Exocron officialdom. I use that house back there for such meetings. It's convenient and keeps them from being overawed by my real home.
The tunnel came to an end in a small, well-lighted room. Cardas popped the door and bounded out as the quadrail slid smoothly to a stop.
Come, come, he urged the others. You're going to love this place, Talon. You really are.
Almost bouncing with childlike anticipation, he led the way to an archway top door. He waved his hand as he approached, and as the wall in the blue house had done, the door simply vanished. And stretched out beyond the doorway was a dream world. Card stepped through, his first impression being that they had stepped into a meticulously tended garden. Directly in front of them was a wide expanse of flowers and small plants and shrubs, all carefully and artistically arranged. At its edges, the garden gave way to a forest of tall trees of dozens of different species. From somewhere within the forest came the bubbling sound of water running over a rock-bottomed creek. It wasn't until he followed the tallest trees up to their tops that he spotted the sky-blue dome above them, a dome that flowed down into unobtrusive walls behind the stands of trees.
"Yes, it's all inside," Cardus confirmed. "Very much inside, in fact. We're under one of the mountains to the east of Rintata City. Beautiful, isn't it?"
He led them through the garden to a concealed door between two red-trunked trees on the far side.
"This is my conversation room, as beautiful as the garden in its own way."
Card looked around. The conversation room was laid out in more or less classic high Alderanian style, done up in dark wood and intertwined plants, with the same feeling of expansiveness as the garden outside. They followed Cardus through the conversation room toward a door to their right.
"Come now," he said. "You'll particularly want to see this."
He waved the door away and gestured them forward. Card stepped inside and stopped in amazement. He was standing at the outer rim of a circular room that appeared to be even bigger across than the garden they'd just left. In the center, there was what looked like a workstation or computer desk. Arrayed in concentric circles around the desk, with only narrow walkways separating them, were circle after circle of 2-meter-high data cases. And filling each of the shelves on each of the data cases were data cards. Thousands and thousands of data cards.
"Knowledge, Talon," Cardus said quietly from beside him. "Information. My passion once. My weapon and my defense and my comfort now."
Card stared. "Cardus's library. And the Camus document?" Cardus gestured them out of the library.
"But come, sit down. I know you have so many questions."
"If it is no bother, I would prefer to stand. Resting in a prolonged seated position, as is required during turbulent space travel, does no good service to my aging joints, and I..."
"Let me start with the most important question," Card said, not moving. "The reason we came here was to look for a vitally important historical document. It involves..."
"Yes, I know,"
Cardus said with a sigh.
"The Camus document. Unfortunately, I can't help you. As soon as the Camus matter broke, I checked through my files to see if I had a copy, but I'm afraid I don't."
Card felt his heart sink. "You're absolutely sure?" Cardus nodded.
"Yes, I'm sorry."
Card nodded back. After the time and effort to get here, there it was, the end of the road, and at its finish, an empty hand. Cardus led the way across the room.
"What have you told the lady about me, Talon?"
Cardus asked as he gestured the two of them to take seats.
"I told her the basics," Card answered.
"How you started the organization, then abruptly left 20 years ago.
"And did you tell her about my kidnapping by the Befasi Dark Jedi?"
Cardus asked, his tone suddenly odd.
"Because that's where it all really began. It was a terrible experience. Possibly the first time in my life I'd felt truly terrified."
Card threw a glance at Shada as Cardus continued.
"He was mad with rage, with all of Darth Vader's power and none of his self-control. One of my crewmen he physically ripped to shreds. The other three he took over mentally, twisting and searing their minds. Me..."
He looked at Card.
"Me, he left mostly alone," he continued. "I'm still not sure why. I suppose he needed me for some reason, or perhaps I amused him with my pitiful schemes to fight back. We headed across the space lanes, avoiding the forces gathering against him. There was nothing I could do. He knew what I was thinking almost before I did. Finally, for reasons I still don't entirely understand, we made for a little backwater system, not even important enough to make it onto most of the charts. A planet with nothing but swamps and dank forests and frozen slush. A planet named Dagobah.
We'd barely stepped outside the ship when we spotted a funny-looking little creature with big, pointed ears standing at the edge of the clearing where we'd put down. He was a Jedi Master named Yoda, and he was waiting for us.